This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Since its debut in 2019, Rob Connolly and his restaurant Bulrush has nourished diners in multiple ways. He makes food that features foraged and homegrown ingredients with roots in the Ozark region. He provides an education on the history of Ozark cuisine, and he creates an experience that's unlike any other because of that and Bulrush's commitment to practices that live up to its reparative mode of doing business. Connolly's appreciation for regional fare has been a career hallmark that's earned him recognition on the highest levels. The most recent is perhaps his most visible. Earlier this month, Connolly was named a finalist for Best Chef Midwest in the 2024 James Beard Foundation Awards. Just a week later, Bulrush took the top spot on Ian Frobe's STL 100, the Best St. Louis Restaurants of 2024. Here to talk with us about those honors and what really makes him proud, we welcome Rob Connolly, chef owner of Bulrush. Rob, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
So you've been on the show before to talk about Bulrush, but I think it would be great to start with a bit of a refresher. What is Ozark cuisine and why is it something that you want to highlight?
The original reason that I opened the restaurant is, as far as I could tell, the Ozarks were the only notable region in the country that hadn't had a chef taken a detailed look at what the origins of that food was. And so you could look at, Mississippi Delta, Appalachian, Pacific Northwest. Everyone's got their take on their regional cuisines, but no one had done Ozark food. And my family's from the St. Genevieve area since the 1820s, so there's some deep roots there. Even though that's not in the Ozarks, that was the gateway to the Ozarks back then. And I thought with my particular background, with my research education and then later social justice work in nonprofits, I thought it'd be an interesting way of digging into what it means to be Ozark food. And you know, the first time I was on this show 4 or 5 years ago, I was asked, what is Ozark cuisine? And I will say what I said then, because nothing's changed. I still don't know, because to me, it's much more about the journey of trying to figure it out in unique ways. Mm-hmm. So we find some old recipes, and yes, we talk to a lot of old timers in the region. But I think there's deeper work that can be done to describe the food.
Mm-hmm. What is it about your culinary background that equipped you to do the kind of work that you're doing?
Well, I think on the culinary side, I have a very broad set of experiences, but this is my third career. I mean, I didn't start cooking till I was 40. Mm-hmm. And so the previous careers, again, with social justice and research, that's why I'm able to look at this a little differently. So people always say, what old recipes did you find? Well, I find a few, but I'm trying to get to the origin of what we eat today. So that's like late 18th, early 19th centuries. There aren't recipes back then because it was oral tradition. You just mm-hmm. knew how to make things. And it's really only about 1841 that we see some recipes pop up, and that's a very specific date. That specific date's because that's when baking powder comes out as a commercial product. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden in Ozark lingo, we go from corn pone, which is fried corn mush, into cornbread, a leavened corn mush. Mm-hmm. But before that, you know, when we look at the role of indigenous people, especially the Osage people, or enslaved individuals who were brought to the area by settlers, that stuff was, again, oral tradition. Mm-hmm. And so by looking at their lives in a non-culinary way, I'm able to learn quite a bit about the food that they were growing, hunting, and sometimes eating. But, you know, by inference, we know that they were eating. And that's what's fun for me, because then we can move ahead 150, 200 years and see the connections to today.
Yeah. Is there an example of something that you serve that that illustrates how research comes together in something that someone has on the plate in front of them?
Yeah, it becomes very subtle how we do it, because one of the things that we are very careful about is not serving old food. We're serving contemporary food. This is 2024 cutting edge tasting menu format foods. But just to give you an example, when we look at the role of indigenous people, for example, I don't feel that's my story to tell. And so what I do is I bring in guest chefs. The most recent guest chef was Chef Bradley Dry. He's a Cherokee chef who's actually known for the TV show Reservation Dogs. He was the chef for that show. And when he came to do his dinner, he wanted to explore the food of his childhood. Well, these were very old, traditional foods of Cherokee people. And he did one called a Kanucky. Kanucky's a nut-based soup. And pretty much every tribe in North America has their version of Kanucky. And as he served it, presented it to the audience, and we saw the response, we thought, okay, well, how can we make this something that's appropriate and respectful that we can serve? Mm-hmm. And so we have a version now that it's not Kanucky. It's some Ozark nut-based soup that allows me to give that respect back to Chef Dry and his history.
Mm-hmm. What kind of nut are you using?
Well, that's actually a great question because he did pecan and hickory nut. Mm-hmm. We're doing pecan and hazelnut. And we do hazelnut for a very specific reason. It gives me a story number two to tell the guests because we don't really have hazelnut in this area anymore, but it is a tree that's native to the area. We know that hazelnut was here back in a time that we call the Hopewell tradition, which is 22,000 years ago, if someone's going to correct me on that, but many, many years ago. And we know this by the partnerships that we have with paleoethnobotanists here in town, especially Gail Fritz, who used to be over at Cahokia Historic Site. Mm-hmm. And so we work in hazelnut because it's delicious, but it also gives us an extra layer of storytelling.
Yeah. To what extent do you think, Rob, this James Beard Award, that the position of finalist this year has been informed by everything that you're talking with us about?
Yeah, it's such a mysterious process. We know a little bit, but we know that we are on their radar because of the depth of work that we're doing. That said, we also were told very explicitly that the transition from semifinalist to finalist is about the food. Period. Mm-hmm. So the story may get you in the door, but the food has to keep the door open.
Okay, sure. So this is something in the research before talking with you. Chef is not a term that you're a fan of. Is that right?
I don't know where you heard that, but that is absolutely true.
Yeah,
that's good research right there.
And it's this is the first time that you're a finalist, and it's now been a couple weeks since the announcement was made. So what does this recognition of, Best Chef Midwest, being a finalist for that, what does it mean to you and to your team at Bulrush?
Yeah, it's funny because I've always stayed away from that title. I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what the title is. And long ago, I thought, well, I'm self-taught. I'm not trained in a culinary school. I've never worked for any other chef than myself. So what do I really know anyway? And to me, a chef is a job title, meaning the manager of a kitchen. And so actually, with this honor this year, that's what I've been thinking a lot about. I have the most ideal team I've had in my career. Mm. I've been able to build a team that works well together, that has amazing creative synergy, great complementary skills, a work ethic that is necessary for a restaurant like this. And so I guess by that standard, I'll take that title at this point of chef because I've built this team. Mm. And when people say a specific comment about any of our foods, I immediately credit my other chefs because they're the ones who are coming up with the ideas and preparing the food. So it's their food.
Right, right.
But the team that we've created, I'll take credit for that, good and bad.
Yeah.
I think we have a really amazing team right now.
How has that been possible? I mean, a team is kind of a recipe in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you look at each of the individuals, you may not say that this is the dream team of the city, but everyone in their own right is spectacular with their own skill sets, and put them all together, and we have some amazing energy in the kitchen right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned Bulrush's reparative approach to doing business in the introduction. Rob, how is that distinct from restauranting as usual, even businesses that aim to be, you know, all about the local?
Yeah. For me, just so there's no confusion, when we say reparative, we believe we are doing reparations in the most classic sense of the word. And unlike government trying to do that, where it's debating ad nauseum about how to do it and why to do it or should we do it, I don't care. It's my business, and I feel that it's important, and I feel that I can run a successful business doing it and be a better business because of it. And I know after 5 years, it's going to turn some customers away, but I don't have to be the restaurant for everyone.
Right.
But if we look at how we got here with Ozark Cuisine and the success of my restaurant, I have to acknowledge the past. I have to acknowledge the role of Indigenous people and enslaved individuals and what contributions they've made, and then figure out ways to provide reparations, including dollars, in a way that is meaningful in the community, but also, once I write that check, my hands are off of it. Mm-hmm. You know, the people that I give these checks to, if they want to spend it on going to the ball game, they can spend it going to the ball game. That's up to them. But I believe I've made the choice to provide that money to people who are going to make the city even better.
Mm-hmm. Is the way that people experience the food, the way that the restaurant is set up, there's a hood, right, in the middle. How is it that you are interacting with diners when they come in such that they understand some of what you're telling me about without your having to tell them?
Yeah. Yeah. We've really evolved. We didn't open to do reparations. It wasn't even an inkling of a thought at the time. I just thought, well, let's figure out how to be respectful in telling this history. And that's my social justice background. And it became clear very quickly that I needed to do something deeper than just tell a story. I can't just keep saying it's not my story to tell and then tell a story that's adjacent to the story. Mm-hmm. I had to find a way to do the work that made rights for the past. So in our physical space, where I used to, for each of our 7 courses, come do this big, heavy-handed discussion about the history and the social justice aspect behind it, I don't do that now. We have a brief video to launch off the meal. It's 3 or 4 minutes. And that's where I say, here's the context that the meal is coming at you through. And then each course I just introduce after that. So maybe a brief story. And I even finished that video saying, look, don't let this weigh you down. You're here for an anniversary. You're here for a birthday. You're here for a special night out. I'm not here to dampen the mood, but I do want you to know what we're trying to do here, because I think it's important to how we can change the city. Again, not waiting for someone else to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to own my role in that change. And when I made that shift to just the one video and making that statement, don't get bogged down in this, I've really seen a shift in the energy, and people get really excited about it. And as the meal goes on or at the end of the meal, so often they pull me to the side and ask me more, or how do I find out more? How can I get involved? You know, even the conversation we're about to have with our student at Normandy High School, that's a great example. Every night people are asking me, how can I help Alex at Normandy High School? I love that.
So it's you're offering a bit of an appetizer, and they're asking questions as a main course.
Yeah.
So I want to underscore here that you've come on the show today, Rob, because of a pitch that you made about a mentee. You've just mentioned her name, and we'll be meeting her very shortly. And it's not about your recent accolades. Announcement about that actually came afterward. How is it that the mentorship came to be in the first place?
So this is very pragmatic. This is me recognizing that the fine dining restaurant world, especially in St. Louis, is a straight white male dominated business. And I, as far as I know, I might be the only maybe gay-owned chef fine dining restaurant in town. That may or may not be true, but I'm certainly one of few. And I wanted to see how I could diversify the industry. Again, not waiting for someone else to do it. I'm just at that age where I'm very impatient about things. And so I reached out to a program called ProStart, which is the National Restaurant Association's high school training program, essentially. It's not quite that, but it's something like that. And they connected me with Chef Andrea O'Bannon, who's the culinary instructor at Normandy High School, because she was a teacher of the year. She's very active in the ProStart program. And when I reached out to Chef O'Bannon, she said, yeah, I would love to have you come in. And the very first time, we didn't know what the relationship would look like. And she didn't know me. You know, volunteers come and go. I could have been any old person who was going to do a one visit and out. But she had me judge a grilled cheese cook-off with the students. And I was expecting American cheese and white bread and just like the most basic thing. I didn't know. And some of the students in there were doing some really interesting things. And my role was I had to make my own also. And I did some fancy schmancy thing that, of course, most people weren't interested in. But is the idea that I wanted them to push the boundary of what they thought was a normal grilled cheese. And we saw people try to, I don't know if it was trying to please me or try to win or whatever reason, all of a sudden the fancy bread comes out and the fancy cheeses. And I think I threw like a sweet jelly relish on mine or I don't remember anymore. And they started doing the same. And we've done a number of those now. Mm-hmm. But very quickly, this is where Chef O'Bannon saw she had some students who were rising to the top who showed a little more interest, not just taking a class for credit. And we focused more of my time on that because that is an opportunity to nurture people who really want to get into the business. And the hope then is, again, you can come work for me or any other fine dining restaurant because you have a level of skill that's comparable or higher than most of the applicants that we get for jobs.
Yeah. You talked about being self-trained, Rob. How has mentoring young people in particular shown up in what diners experience at Bull Rush, where you are making the food, you know, with your team?
Yeah, I think they see a different level of managing. Like anyone who watches, for example, the TV show The Bear, you know, we're so used to seeing the screaming, yelling, berating chef. And whether that's my background, my education, or my age, that's not me. Mm-hmm. I hire good people. I give them as much support as I'm able, and then I get out of their way and let them do their job. And that even goes for the younger, what we call stages, the interns, you know, when the high school students come in or even professionals who stage with us. I'm not there looking over their back because I trust that they'll do the right thing, or I can step in and give them the support they need, or my team will do that, which is what happens more often. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, but no one comes to me to learn how to make a, I don't know, some fancy culinary thing. That's not what I do.
Right.
We don't have recipes at the restaurant. We know techniques, and I bring them crazy ingredients that I forage in the morning or a farmer brings to us, and we make it happen.
We're going to take a very quick break here. When we come back, we'll meet the state culinary arts champ from Normandy High School who's been working with Rob Connolly and getting ready to compete for national level gold in Seattle this summer. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Rob Connolly, the chef owner of Bull Rush. He's a 2024 finalist for James Beard Foundation Award for Best Chef Midwest. Now, before the break, we were talking about priorities that govern what happens in your restaurant, Rob. And one of those is restorative community work through mentorship. One of those mentees is Normandy High School senior Alex Belton. Alex is a two-time Missouri State Champion in Culinary Arts and a full-time boss because she is on her way to her second consecutive chef competition at the national level. And she joins us now to share how she's working with Rob Connolly to bring home gold and what makes their mentor-mentee pairing a partnership. Alex, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
So, Alex, talk with us about what sparked your interest in cooking.
To be honest, I really didn't have interest in culinary. But I had Chef Albanin's class. She asked me one day during winter break if I wanted to do a competition. I was 2 seconds away from saying no, and I say yes.
What was it that changed your mind?
You won't know what you're getting into until you say yes.
Mm-hmm. So before you took Chef O'Bannon's ProStart class, what was the level of experience you had in the kitchen? Like, did you have something that you would make on a regular basis, or?
Not really, to be honest. I wasn't interested, so I didn't really cook as much.
Mm-hmm. So you started competing, though, after the 2 seconds of hesitation last year when you were a junior. What is it that you felt in competing that gave you sort of motivation to keep going?
I felt like I knew that I had it in me. I just had to bring it out, and I did. So the continuous wins after that brought me my motivation to keep going.
Was that a surprise at all?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
What were some of the things that you were making that got you those wins?
So the first regional and state dish was, I gotta say it slow, seared pork medallions with a brown butter pumpkin spate soup with a green peppercorn sauce, shaved Brussels sprouts with bacon, and sauteed pears.
And was that your idea to make that?
It wasn't.
Okay.
So FCCLA, they give us menus and we have to make sure that we execute it the proper way.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave us that menu and we had to make it work.
Mm-hmm. And what is it about cooking that you now enjoy?
The feel that it gives me. I'm very happy when I cook. Sometimes, you know, I have my days in the kitchen, but cooking makes me happy. So whenever I feel a certain type of way, I cook and I'm feeling so much better.
Mm-hmm. How do people react to your food?
Oh, they love it.
Have you had a particularly harsh critic? Uh-oh. There was a look shot across the table here. That's a great segue to the mentorship. So how is it that you felt about working with Rob in the beginning? And has that changed at all, Alex?
I have a lot more respect for him, knowing that he's famous.
Yeah.
he's very patient. I thought that he was going to be a little harsh, but he's very patient. And I need that because I'm a newbie and I'm trying to get the feel of it. And when he teaches us things, he doesn't teach us how to cook. He teaches how to be a chef.
Mm. So, what's the difference?
Cooking is just, I'm just going to make this and we're going to eat it. But being a chef, you have to know the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
And I also get that a lot from Chef O'Bannon as well.
Yeah.
You have to know your way around the kitchen. You need to know how to manage a kitchen. You need to know what it is to be a chef.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a specific example of how Rob has shown patience in the kitchen with you?
I have a really bad attitude in the kitchen when things go wrong.
Okay.
And I pout and whine a lot. But he doesn't give up on me.
Okay.
So he kind of deals with my whining and then tells me what I need to hear.
Okay. So telling her what she needs to hear, Rob, I mean, how have you approached mentoring Alex specifically?
Yeah, you know, what she says is her weakness. I get that from my professional chefs as well, even at age 30 and 40. And the difference is the way I can work with Alex is I can see her receptiveness mm-hmm. to the feedback. And there's always a short resistance, like I think any of us do. And then she absorbs it. And I think that's because at this point, she sees the outcome. Like early on, I don't know this. She didn't know me. Mm-hmm. And she didn't know if that feedback would do anything. And she didn't say it, but the first day I made her cry.
Oh.
And I think my feedback was pretty subtle from a professional kitchen standpoint. Mm-hmm. But to a student, having the stranger come in and give critique the way I did, it made her cry, which I think we both laugh at this point. I still do. But now that's not it at all. I mean, I think about the transition, like she was saying, from a cook to a chef, mm-hmm. Preparing for the most recent competition and how she, the first practice related to the other chefs in the kitchen, and they were grating on her nerves because she's experienced and they're not.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, I pulled her aside. I said, look, your job is to be the leader here, and here's how we do that. And then after that, the kitchen ran so much more smoothly, and seeing the confidence that she had as a result of that, that's what was exciting.
Yeah. Do you remember what that critique was, that very first critique, Alex?
Yes.
We both do.
With the grilled cheese competition, he was getting ready to eat my sandwich, and then he said, salt, please.
Stop?
Salt.
Salt. Oh. Well.
Yeah.
Is that a common mistake?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But salt on a sandwich.
Because we're doing restaurant food. If
right.
people want a home-style grilled cheese, they can make one at home. If you want something special and unique, then you need to do something special and unique. And oftentimes, it's just the subtlest amount of salt to tease out the flavor, not to make it salty.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember your bread or your cheese at this point, but I looked at it and I thought, boy, this needs salt already.
Oh, my gosh. So that's obviously a lesson that you have not forgotten.
Not at all.
So let's talk a little bit about the competition itself. You know, many people's minds, I think, will go straight to Food Network or Gordon Ramsay when they hear cooking competition. Alex, how does the Family, Career, and Community Leaders of America, you had said FCCLA earlier, how does the Culinary Star event compare to some of the competitions that people are more familiar with from TV and media?
The difference is typically in a Food Network competition, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. You don't know what you're making. You always typically will have like a mystery dish or something like that. With FCCLA, we get time to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
They give us things to follow, and we can prepare up until it's time to compete. So preparation is very different. Half of the time, I will say, we have to provide our own equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But the station and the food, we get provided already.
Yeah.
But with Food Network, everything is there for you.
So, right, right.
Preparation is just really the big difference.
Mm-hmm. And when you say equipment, what are we talking about?
Bowls, pots, pans, utensils, those type mm-hmm. of equipment.
That must add up. So how is it that you support, you must have family support for this? Perhaps not?
Yes.
Yeah? So you're doing this very much on your own?
With the help of my mentor mm-hmm. and my instructor, Chef O'Bannon, and all of the lovely people in my life, I have a lot of support.
Okay. You're a bigger boss than we mentioned at the beginning. So we're looking at about 2 months out from the competition. And Alex, you've talked about some of the prep that you need to do beforehand. Rob, from your perspective as the mentor, what does training or prep at this stage look like?
Yeah, I think there's, from my side of the equation, there's really two things. We need to make sure that there are the funds to get her there, because this one's in Seattle. This is a long trip, and it's multiple days. So we have to work on that. And then on the food side, she knows this recipe. She's done it, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 times at this point, to the point that you get sick of it. And so it's really the clock. You have to make it within the time frame and use your time efficiently. So Alex actually has gotten so good that sometimes there's too much time left at the end. That's not good, because they look at that and say, well, you didn't use your time wisely. And so, for example, last year we gave her a couple of extra things that would impress the judges, using ingredients that she already had that were not expected or required, that would show another skill, and it would fill in that time better because she is so efficient.
Right. So what is it that you made last year?
Last year, I made a sauteed chicken breast with a mustard cream sauce, rice pilaf, and a garden salad. But the extra that was added was pesto.
Oh, are we talking, so was this basil and pine nuts, or?
It was garlic, parsley, and salt.
Okay.
With a little of my vinaigrette.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we can only use what they provide.
Right.
And they have a scoring system that favors not wasting ingredients. Every other competitor would have taken the extra of all that stuff and just thrown it away. And Alex took it, and I showed her a technique of releasing the oil, smashing it with your knife on a cutting board as an abrasive, using the salt and the herbs and the garlic. And so it scored extra points philosophically, if nothing else, with the judges. They saw a level of ambition they didn't see from any other competitor.
I see. Alex, how is it that you're practicing, and where do you do that?
I practice at my school. We have this commercial kitchen. Mm-hmm. And I typically practice about 2 or 3 times a week if I can, if I have the time for it. And typically, what we do is we set up as if I'm in the competition setting, and we do everything full out as if I'm competing. Mm-hmm. And we do this back to back until I can get it.
Okay. So, Rob, you mentioned working against the clock. Alex, I imagine that that is nerve-wracking. Are there any other things that you've done, other activities that have helped you to understand how to manage time? Or is that something that you really have built up through this experience of cooking?
So I want to say it's 50-50. I have an art business, so I kind of have to, like, move quickly when I paint. Or, for instance, I face paint. So I also have to move fast with that as well, because there's a lot of children.
Yes, it is. So, and they don't stay still.
At all. So I had to really, like, work on time with that. And then just everyday thing in the kitchen, being with Chef, I have to move with a sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm. Rob, as you look at the growth and development that Alex, has, that she's going through, what is it that excites you most from the perspective of someone who is running a restaurant? There's no other restaurant like Bull Rush, but as you're running Bull Rush, what is it that gives you most optimism, sort of looking at what Alex is doing?
Well, you can hear the confidence in this interview itself. And I think about the first time she communicated with me over 2 years ago. And even in this interview, the two times she's had to describe her menu, how clear and articulate, that's part of that training. You know, she's come so far in 2 years in that ability to present herself to the world. I mean, you see the leader she's going to become. She's a high school senior.
I know.
She is on the school board.
Oh.
She's the student representative on the school board. These are things that no other student gets, right? I mean, the leadership that she has developed, that we are witnessing, even in this interview, are things that really excite me, because wherever she ends up next, you know she's going to do well. She's going to be fine, and we just need to support her so she can flourish in whatever way she needs to.
Yeah. So, Alex, this is your senior year in high school. So a lot of people do not know what they want to do and when they quote-unquote grow up. Is this what you're doing, the cooking? Is this something that you want to translate into a career?
Yes, and I am working on that right now.
Mm-hmm. Just with the competition, what is in your future?
Culinary school, and once I get done with culinary school, the goal is to go back to my school, which is Normandy, mm-hmm. and I will be teaching at Normandy until I open up my restaurant.
And would you do that here in St. Louis?
Yes.
Are there any other places you'd like to visit?
Honestly, I have a lot of places that I want to go, but Colorado is kind of big for me. Being in Colorado was great, so I feel like that would be the perfect place for me.
Mm-hmm. That was last year's national competition.
Oh, I see. And this year is Seattle.
Seattle.
Have you ever been to the Pacific Northwest?
Oh, no.
It's beautiful. What are the areas, Alex, that you see where you would like to grow or improve as a chef?
I will be attending Johnson & Wales University in Charlotte, North Carolina. So I would say that would be my first. Also, like I said, Colorado, maybe California, and mm-hmm. definitely here.
So, Rob, earlier there was some discussion about what is needed for Alex to get to Seattle for the national competition. And I understand that you need to raise about $8,000 for Alex to make it there, and that whatever is donated will be matched by Bull Rush and by the Normandy School Board. How is it that the public can support Alex in her pursuit?
Yeah, of course, well wishes. All moral support is always welcome. But, you know, they say cash is king, and she may not have the confidence to ask for it, but I will. And mm-hmm. just say that if people bring checks made out to the Hero Hut Fund, H-E-R-O Hut Fund, and they can bring them to the restaurant or they can take them to Normandy High. Either way, all that money, Bull Rush is going to match. And then the school district has some funds from that Hero Fund, but also other school funds. And so they'll be providing as well.
Well, best of luck to you, Alex.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rob, for coming in.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Roche Hemmings.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
St. Louis on the Air proudly supports local artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.